Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what happened is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin. I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005. And my accountant had gotten in cahoots. And next thing you know, my accountant died. And a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, we have a problem. She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years, signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact. Because I wasn't watching it.
So
like,
you could just see $100,000
deducted.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was my lawyer called me and said, hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here. Oh, man. He said, this woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor.
every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes.
New tax.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
they'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarion. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarion took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarion, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Well, hey, folks, and welcome to Solar Cabin Channel. I've got a neat little project for you I call the Multi-Shack. This is one of my homeless housing solutions designs. And some of you probably don't know this, but I was homeless twice in my life. The first time was when I was trying to get into college, and I had lost my job and was waiting for my college funding to come in. And so I had to live in my truck. I lived in the cab of my truck for almost 2 months while I waited for my college funding to come in. And then again later in life when I got divorced and didn't have a job and was trying to get off grid, I lived for almost 2 years in a camp trailer. And, you know, there's a lot of people that, homeless people that have their pride. They want to maintain their independence. They don't want to live on welfare. They don't want to be caught up in the system. And, you know, all they need is a simple shelter. You know, some place to get out of the cold, to get out of the wind, to get out of the rain, while they get back on their feet. And so I know there's a lot of organizations out there that are helping the homeless, churches, nonprofits, and things like that. So I came up with this small structure design, which I call the Multi-Shack, because it has actually multi-uses to it. And it can be built very affordably. You can build this entire shack for under $200. And it is built on wheels. It can be put on either a 4x6 trailer, or you can build it on casters. Casters are a lot less expensive, but it still allows you to move this unit around. So you could store, you know, a bunch of these on a church parking lot, and then just when you need them, you can move them out to wherever you want the person to be using them. Casters are 4-inch casters. Each caster will hold up to 240 pounds, so they'll more than handle the weight for this structure here. Now, this structure is 6'5" from the peak to the bottom, 6'5". So, and even a tall person can stand upright inside this structure. The door is 1'6" wide and about 5'3" to the peak up there in the door. And the structure is 4 foot wide approximately and about 6 foot long. About 6 foot long by 4 foot wide, 6'5" to the peak. And this is constructed very inexpensively from 2x4 framing, which I'll show you, and uses, I would use 7/16 OSB or plywood. Either one would work for the siding on this. Now, a couple of the features here. I show this with dorm windows. The dorm windows are actually optional. You don't have to put dorm windows. You can just go with a flat roof surface if you want here. I show this with wood shingles, or you could use just plain old tar paper and roofing shingles. Any type of roofing shingles would work on this. Show it with a little flower box there just for effect. And on the backs and the front, I show this with these round windows, like boat-style windows, or you could put square windows. Either one works. I just like the effect of the round windows, the look of those in there. This does have an access panel on the back. Down here is an access panel. We'll just open this up so I can show you. Open up, take this one off. There we go. Now you can see inside the access panel. Underneath the seat and bed is storage, lots of storage underneath here for a propane tank, one of those Port-a-Loo porta-potties, an ice chest over there you can see. Okay, so there's good storage. This is about 18 inches high inside here and about 4 feet wide inside. So the structure, I'll show this with the door open. Let me just hide this door here. With the door open, you can see I've got this set up. Right now I've got it set up for seating. During the day, this would be used for seating purposes. Okay, and I'm going to pull the side roof off here so I can show you inside. That this has a very nice space for a person that maybe is going to school or working, or just the table can be used for eating or whatever. So you've got approximately 6 feet of space on the inside here by 4 feet wide. And this table is actually part of the bed platform, which I'll show you. You just pull the 2x4 out, put it in one of these slots. It's in this 2x4 here. There's another one on the other side. You just drop the 2x4 into the slot, and then you take your bed panel and put it up on top of that, and then that becomes a table. Here you've got 2 foot by 4 foot cushions. There's three of these cushions that become your bed, or you can use a roll-up mattress pad underneath this that becomes your bed. But during the daytime, it becomes seating. It becomes a little mini couch in here, 4 foot wide. And now you've got a space for a student to do their studies, their work, or for having your meal, or if you're working on a hobby or a craft or something like that, you've got this nice little space. When you get out the door, you just lift the table up, put it back, put the 2x4 back in the bottom slots, put the table down, and then you turn it into a bed. And I'm going to show you what it looks like as a bed, too. So, good headroom in this. I really like that it's got a very good space. This is an average person, 5'8" tall. You can see you've got lots of headroom here. You've got these nice dormer windows, which would give you lots of light, and also gives you a little bit more headroom up in this area right in here. A 6 foot person could stand up in the middle of this quite comfortably. Two people could actually share, sit side by side on this couch, or you can pull your ice chest cooler out, or someone could put a foldable chair on the other side here. So you could actually have two people sitting side by side or crossways next to each other here. So lots of space in this little place. So let me show you what the framing looks like on this first. And I'll just have to zoom in on this. Now this is all done with 2x4 construction to keep it inexpensive and easy to build. And then I would sheath it with either 7/16 inch OSB or plywood. Either one would work. Now, it's got a floor frame, as you can see, made of 2x4s down here. Simple 2x4 frame, floor frame construction. And then your casters attach to the corners, not exactly in the corners, but they attach to the floor framing. And the casters have locks on them, so once you move this in place, you can just click on the locks and lock it in place so it won't be rolled around while the person is inside it. Now, this is the bed platform, and it has this back platform is 2 foot 6 inches wide, and it is permanently connected. These are 1 foot 9 inch wide platforms that can be raised up, and as you can see, these 2x4s right here, you put the 2x4 up in these other slots, and then you put these panels up on top, and they become either a table or a workspace. This one can go up here. This one can go on the end. It can go over the middle. So I gave you lots of options for the ways that you can organize this into workspace or living space as you need to use it. Very simple construction. It takes about 22 by 4s to build this. That's about it. And you're looking at about under $200 for all the material costs. And you could build one of these in a day. Seriously, you could build the complete unit in about a day. And now I'm going to show you on the inside how this can be used as a bed and also as a small business. So I'm just going to click off this. Okay, now I show this with the bed down. The door open so you can kind of get a peek inside here. Now, this is an uninsulated structure. You really don't need insulation in a small structure like this because the human body puts off about as much heat as a 90-watt light bulb. So in a small structure like this, your own body heat will actually heat it up. And for sleeping, you can either do these pads like this as mattress pads, or you can just get a sleeping bag pad or even an air cushion pad to go underneath it. A sleeping bag pad would work fine because you can roll it up and use it as your seating. And a good heavy-duty sleeping bag would be all you would need in order to sleep very comfortably in here. As long as you don't have the wind blowing on you or the rain drenching you or snow piling up on you, you'll sleep very comfortably in a small structure like this. Your own body heat will heat it up. You could add a heater to these, but it really isn't necessary in these small structures. So I'm going to pull off the side roof, and I'm going to show you how much space this has inside it for a bed. It actually has a very nice bed that will sleep either one or two people. Pull this off here. Just hide this. Now, this has a 4 foot wide by 6 foot long bed. So even an average person can sleep in here. Even a tall person, fairly tall person, could sleep in here comfortably without being cramped. And it's 4 foot wide, so that's a very wide bed that will actually sleep two people. Two people could sleep in this space, all right? And it's 6 foot wide, and it's 4 foot wide and 6 foot long. This person I show in here is about 5 foot 8 inches tall, which is average height for most people. And here you can see the slots I was talking about. These platforms, which I'll show you, I'll take the bed off now. These two platforms are removable with 2x4s underneath them. You just take the 2x4, you put it in the slots that go across here, and then put these platforms up on top to make your table. And you can actually do a table on either end or one in the middle for a desk and table. Now, the ones on the ends I'll show you are used if you want to run a small business out of here or if you want to organize this in a different way so that if you're cooking, you could put one of these tables on this end or on this end. And you could set up your cooking supplies, and you can take care of yourself. You can cook a meal inside this little place right here. So 4 foot wide, 6 foot long bed, and then very adaptable with these platforms of 2x4s. You can just put them up, and you can reorganize this any way you want during the daytime for whatever function that you're going to be using. Again, it has storage space underneath the bed and seating. You've got that nice access panel for you got storage underneath there. And I really like the space in here. This would be enough adequate space if in an emergency, let's say that a city has a disaster, a fire like they just had in Canada wipes out all these homes, or you have a tornado tear through a place, or you have flooding or something like that, which we've all seen in the news, happens all the time, and suddenly churches are overrun with people that don't have housing. You know, if you had a bunch of these sitting around, that would sleep at least two people, you could pull these out in a small area. You could set these up and people would at least have shelter for, you know, survival until they can get into houses or shelter, bigger shelters or something like that. So that's another use for this type of structure here. So now I'm going to put the bed back on just to show you. And again, you can see this has really nice dormer windows, so you got really good light in this, and it's got an excellent sleeping space. It would be better for one person, but it would be adequate for two people, okay? And, if you got little teeny kids with you, you could put, one adult and a couple of kids in there, too. You know, there's enough space in there to sleep comfortably. and you've got lots and lots of headroom. You're not going to bump your head or anything while you're sleeping. Doorway, 1 foot 6 inches wide, 5 foot 3 inches to the top up here. So lots and lots of good space in this. Now I'm going to show you how this can also be modified to be used as a small business. Okay, one thing I know about people that are homeless is they're also very creative, and you know, a lot of them actually run little businesses in order to support themselves. A lot of them do recycling. They recycle cans and bottles and other stuff like that, or they pick up small appliances and stuff that they may find on the streets, or books or pictures or whatever, and they resell them, and that's how they support themselves. A lot of them are also very crafty people. They may make jewelry, or they may make wood crafts or something like that, or they may be artists. And so they have a way to support themselves, and so I think we ought to encourage that, because that helps them to develop sustainability. Not everybody is equipped to work in the regular workforce. Some people just aren't, but they're very industrious and can support themselves with a small business. And so I thought, well, this shack could also be used for setting up a small business. So what I did is I made this so that the window here can be hinged up, and I'll show this. The window on the one of the dormers, or both, can be hinged up out of the way. And then you've got room here to put a sales counter or little platform here where this person is 5 foot 8 inches tall. A person can stand in this window and they can operate a small business. They can talk to customers, they can take money, whatever, working right out of this small shack. Now, this doesn't necessarily have to be for homeless people. If you wanted to run a hot dog or hamburger stand, or sell your crafts or your books, or, you know, whatever you want to do with this, maybe it's a ticket stand, I don't know. This little shack could be very useful for a lot of different purposes. That's why I call it a multi-shack, is because it can be used for many different purposes. But this would be great for a homeless person that has a craft that they make, or recycle products or whatever. They want to sell them. They just hinge up the window, and they set themselves up a little business here to take care of customers. Now, this also shows inside how those tables can be reorganized. Here you can see I've lifted up the bed platform to put a table on this end, another table on this end, and you can use this for cooking in here. You can see I've got a little two-burner propane stove that you can set up on one of the tables up there, so you can do your cooking. You can work on your crafts. This table just lifts off. The 2x4 lifts off if you need to get access to the door. Lots of good headroom, okay? Workspace in there. This can be modified many different ways for many different people of however you want to use it. So a very functional space in there. All right, so that is the multi-shack, all right? And let me just unhide this so you can get a better view of it. Again, can be built very inexpensively, around under $200 on casters, more expensive if you put it on a trailer. And I'm going to provide these plans for free, because this is a project that I designed specifically for churches and nonprofit organizations to build shelters. And at present in the U.S., we have about 1.6 million homeless people that just need a simple shelter to live in. Or we have, that's about one out of 200 people. And that's just in the U.S. There's a lot of people in other countries that are in even worse shape. And I really think a project like this would be great for helping the homeless people to have shelter while maintaining their independence and their pride. But it could also be used as disaster relief shelters. You know, we could easily have a major disaster in a city where we have thousands and thousands of people that suddenly are homeless and we need to provide quick shelter. These would also work for that. It would be big enough space for two people to sleep and, you know, to take care of their basic needs. And that's what this structure is about. So I hope you like this design. It's called the Multi-Shack. You can get the plans for free on my website, simplesolarhomesteading.com. Up at the top, look at Multi-Shack. Now, there is a button there if you would like to donate. Your donations are used by me to design structures like this and build small houses. I work with a lot of homeless people that don't want to be in the system, that want to build their own off-grid cabins and houses and places like that. I help them with designs and building those projects. So any donation, if you can donate, is very appreciated and will help with those projects. All right, folks, I hope you like this project called the Multi-Shack, and have a great day.
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts, so when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working, and then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tonnes of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from Solar Now retailers to get their businesses going.
Solar Now is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technician, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here in homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Because it's cold, the beer tastes better, and so I get more customers.
All right. We're briefly going to mention today business models, particularly what I call tetrahedron business models. So what is a tetrahedron? It's a pyramid. Not every pyramid is a tetrahedron, but if you take, they're like 118 pyramids in Egypt. Egypt's not the only place that has pyramids. They have them in Mexico and South America and other places in Africa too. But the type of tetrahedron I'm talking about, a few of the pyramids in Egypt are tetrahedrons, which essentially, now, because you know those structures have been around for thousands of years, they have five sides. Now they have, well, on the surface, which is visible, they have four sides, not three. I mean, each side is a triangle. All right, but you have four, count it yourself, four sides that are shaped like triangles, and then there's a base, which is the foundation. That's what I call the fifth side. That's what a tetrahedron is. You can look it up online. But and I've noticed some businesses are basically built. They don't look like physically like a tetrahedron, but they have, you know, five fundamental parts to them. Now, if you go from looking at Roman or Greek architecture, particularly like the Parthenon, you know, where they have these columns or these, you know, old school banks that, you know, the very solid looking buildings with, you know, four or five columns out front. The marketer J. Abraham calls those pillars of profit. Now, the way he breaks it down is this, and you can relate this to the tetrahedron business model, is you don't want to depend on one source of income or one source of revenue, which many people do. Many people, they go out and they get a job that brings in, and some paychecks, you know, it's just one source, although it might bring a paycheck in every 2 weeks. Some jobs you get paid every week. Some jobs, I believe, on some university levels, not all universities, you get paid like maybe once a month. That might be the custom in some countries too, you know, you get paid once a month. But that one job is just one source of revenue. So with a tetrahedron, okay, we're talking business model. You're talking about, okay, what do you have coming in from at least, bare minimum, five different sources? Now, and although we're not a church here, nothing like that, but in Ecclesiastes 11:2, it says that, once again, I'm paraphrasing, that you need to consider having bare minimum 7 to 8 sources of revenue. Once again, I'm paraphrasing. You can look it up yourself, Ecclesiastes 11:2. Tell me how it speaks to you. Then give us a call at 619-768-2945. I try to do things like, it's not the only way. It might not be the best way, but I try to simplify it, like real simple, in everyday 2023, 2024, average guy walking down the street language. So with us, we have the foundation of two of the business models. Now, the other side's to it, but which we'll give to, because we have a conference call meeting with our four members on one of these projects. But one, and that's why I play the audio lately almost every day, is get something small that you can build within a day or so. Let's say a day or two. All right. And then the other business, and then sell it. And then the other, and then, of course, the tetrahedron, that's just one part of the tetrahedron, because there are other parts to make that whole thing realized. And then the other one would be a larger building, which is the solar cabin. More expensive to build, but now, as he stated, well, he built it in 14 days. That's solo. So we'll be working out ways on how we can collapse the time on that. So instead of 14 days, you know, what can we do to get it built in less than 14 hours? And it's part of Toyota. Toyota manufactures 29.9 cars per minute. On average, the average Toyota car has about 30,000 parts. Now, they didn't start off that way, but, you know, that's where they're at right now. When Henry Ford was alive, it took, oh, man, it took probably about 2 to 3 months to build one car. And then when they start to do the assembly plant, they got the collapse, what I call collapse time. So instead of being built in 2 to 3 months, they, matter of fact, let's look it up now. Since we have access to all this computer stuff here. Okay, and you can look it up with me. Fact check me if I miss something. Okay. All right. Let's see. Time spent to build a Ford Model T. Okay, let's see. All right, Henry Ford and his colleagues spent 2 years working on a secret project to develop a car for the common man. All right. How long did it take to build a Model T Ford? Ford's new Highland Park assembly plant began producing cars with an efficiency that was unheard of at the time. Initially, the chassis was assembled in 12 hours and 8 minutes. But by 1914, it only took 93 minutes to assemble a new Model T. All right, so it took 2 years to come up with something where they were able to assemble a car in 12 hours and 8 minutes. But by 1914, it only took 93 minutes to assemble a new Model T. And right now in 2023, it takes 1 minute to assemble 29.9 Toyota cars. All right, now, let's see. So getting back to what's his name, Lamar, and it's very good. That I'm impressed, man. One person can build an entire cabin by himself in 14 calendar days. That's good. I consider that good. But if you put a team of people together, all right, you know, you can even beat that speed. That's where we play, and I'm looking for it now. It's time for my nine friends audio. Let me see. Okay. All right. Because, like I say, the first time you build something, there's a learning curve there. You know, so it might take you some time. You know, you might not build in a day on day one. It might take you two, three, might take you a week or so. But, and more than likely with Lamar, that wasn't his first rodeo. It's just he had enough, and this goes to the book of the first 20 hours, which I've played that audio on here several times before. It's in the first 20 hours, you're learning the fundamentals. You learn enough of the fundamentals of something, you know, how to play a guitar, how to learn a language, even how you walk, how we all learn how to walk. In the first 20 hours, you know, like, let me give an analogy. The fastest humans on Earth, Olympic runners, sprinters, all right, they're all born like the rest of us. All right, when they come out of that womb, they do not even know how to walk. They don't even know how to crawl when we come out of that womb. Usain Bolt, what have you. They don't know how to run. They don't know how to walk. Okay, so it's a process. You know, we had to learn how to pull ourselves up. That takes the development of certain muscles. Then we had to learn how to stand up. And when we first stand up, we're not standing up long, okay? And we're talking about whoever you are and the world's fastest humans on Earth right now, Olympic sprinters, okay? So we're going through the exact learning curves, and we're not standing up long. We fall down. Then we get enough confidence, and we get to hang. All right, I can stand up for as long as I please. Now, then we take the first step, and we fall. Some of us, we might get to step two steps, but eventually we'll fall. Okay. But we keep on because you're learning by your mistakes. I don't know if anybody's done any scientific study on this, but what is the average number of times does it take for a person to actually learn how to walk? How many times does the average human being try to attempt to stand up? After they stand up, attempt to walk, and then fall down, busting our head, busting our lip, crying. But as we get through that, we're at it again. So that's how we learn how to walk. Just like we learn our first language, because the human brain, like there are over 5,000 or 6,000 living languages on planet Earth. And this is just me. I believe that every human being, healthy human being, we're wired to speak those 5,000 or 6,000 living languages. We're wired for that. It's just, you know, how many do we want to learn? Because within our own, if you just speak one language, okay, I mean, just with English. There are probably over 20 or 50 dialects of English. Now, I can take somebody that's in New England or certain parts of New York City, You know what? Let me take somebody from, let's say, Brooklyn, New York, somebody from Boston, Massachusetts proper, somebody from that speaks the Cockney dialect of England, of English, in out of London, and then let me send them. Okay, so we got like four or five people that basically all speak English, but they're different, virtually different languages, because they might not be able to understand what I mean. Give them a sheet of paper, give them one sentence, and they'll repeat it word for word, and it'll sound different from each person. So, and then professionally, you know, a lot of professions have their own vocabulary, you know. So getting back to, you know, how we learn how to walk and talk and all that, because we didn't take any, there's no formal classes that I know of where you learn how to walk. You know, you learn in your first language. Most of us learn how to fluently speak our first language without even knowing how to write the language or even read the language. In the English language, and speaking to the Americans now, when we were going through the Dick and Jane books, I don't know if the youngins now get the Dick and Jane books, or Dr. Seuss books, okay, by the time you got to Hop on Pop and Green Eggs and Ham, before you got to those books, okay, See Dick Run, See Jane Run, See Spot Run, before we got to those books, we were already speaking fluently. But we couldn't read. By the time you knew how to say See Spot Run and say it fluently, where people understood it, you know, you knew what you were communicating, you didn't even know how to write it, me included. You didn't know how to write it. Okay. If we put it in front of you, See Spot Run, you didn't know how to read it. So it's the same with anything, and we'll get into that with when it comes to house building and all other things we do. So let's see. Let me get my 9 friends here. So Lamar built that cabin in 14 calendar days by himself. All right, so one of the things that we'll be discussing is what do we need to do to, and I'm going to get feedback from you guys, you know, when we get into these, you know, private little meetings starting tomorrow afternoon, is, all right, what do we need to do? Now, we know there, if Lamar can build a cabin by himself in 14 calendar days, all right, and he's not the only one. There are people that have been doing that for centuries. Okay. Now, we know that fact. And once again, going back to the first 20 hours, the book, The First 20 Hours, okay, where you're learning the fundamentals of something, walking, talking, learning the language, whatever, where you learn enough to self-correct. And that's what it is. When we're learning how to walk before we become these Olympic sprinters or whatever, when we get up and fall down, get up and bust our lip and fall down again, fall down some stairs. I fell over a banister, got knocked out cold. My mother had to carry me to the hospital. I think I'm a cat, because I done been through some stuff where I should have just been gone. But I'm still here. So I don't know if I got 9 lives left. But I know two of them, I at least got 7 more left. So we learn by making mistakes, learn by doing. So in the book, The First 20 Hours, learning anything, You can learn the fundamentals in 20 hours. So when we learn how to walk, when we learn how to speak, those first 20 hours where we're learning enough where we can self-correct. So we know that, like, say, with the first project that we'll be working on is, now, Lamar says it can be built in a day. All right? But Lamar's done it by himself several times. All right? So the point where we want to get to is, what do we need to do, all right, where we get from 14 days down to maybe 14 hours? Same house, but instead of 14 days. Now, obviously, it's going to have to include other people. So that's where is this at? Nine Friends comes in at. I'm going to play it again, and we're going to get back to this. How we can get the collapse time, because we know if we can go from 14 days, we can get down to 14 hours. But from 14 hours, can we get it down to 1 hour, actually less than an hour, or even down to 14 minutes?
I say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday.
Okay, my computer is buffering, so let me refresh myself here on my laptop. So, yeah, so while that's refreshing, okay, and now we're not going to, you know, this. I'm just putting this out here. I'm thinking out loud, but I'm planting the mustard seed now. We know that humanly one person, after they learn the ropes to make their mistakes solo, they can do something in 14 hours. That's nothing new. There's a zillion people on the planet that can do that right now. All right. So we want to go from, what does it take to go from 14 hours to, I mean, 14 days to 14 hours. Now, somebody that I've mentioned on here several times before, Randy Jones, and I mentioned his website yesterday. I mean, not website, YouTube channel, Incredible Tiny Homes. Randy Jones started out building one tiny house for himself. He now has a business building tiny homes where they do 3 to 5 complete builds per day. Now, how does he do it? Okay, now in a complete day, like, he can build from scratch a tiny house in 8 hours with a seven-man team. With a seven-man team. All right. So that one, but he's up to doing 3 to 5 tiny houses a day. All right. 3 to 5 stick builds. 3 to 5 a day. All right. So somewhere along the line, it involves manpower. You've got to multiply yourself on that. Whereas with Toyota and I guess Palm Harbor and RV makers, and there's a whole lot of people out there. The Factory City, now the Factory City audio I play, what they do, I'm not going to play that day, so it's too long. But, you know, they've got teams of 25 people and teams of 35 people that, you know, they have these teams, and they're able to assemble whatever they're making in mass numbers.
Say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass, high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, You know whose cars it is? He said, no. He said, well, I bought the house, not the cars. Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, we finna fix this house. I said, what kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, these my friends. The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family going to live in there? Is they going to... I'm going to get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
Okay, so now they didn't, they renovated a house. You know, nine pickup trucks. All right, here's my visual on this. 9 pickup trucks, and each pickup truck probably had at least 2 individuals, the driver, and at least one other person on average. So we're talking about 18 people, 19 including the guy who bought the house. So we're talking about 19 people that and let's say the house was like a 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom house, nothing special or fancy, but a 3-1. And they, well, you heard what he said. It looked brand new. You know, now, because when you have, and let's break that up. You got a crew of 19. All right, now, you got 3 bedrooms. Here's the way I would do it. Now, there's no right or wrong way, because it's only limited to your imagination. Here's how I would do this is why we're doing hands-on. Boots on the ground, hands-on, starting in the Jacksonville market. But we'll be documenting stuff so you can see it online as well in live streams. All right, you got a house that needs repair. All right, you got a total, including yourself, there's 19 people. All right, now, for me personally, I'm not going through just rough details. I'm just the rough detail. Number one, I would assign the buddy system, partners. 2 people per room. So you got 3 bedrooms. You got 2 people per room. 2 people per room. So 3 bedrooms, that accounts for 6 people right there. I would have another 2 people that would be in charge of food and refreshments. 2 people that are making sure that there's plenty of water, Gatorade, whatever they like to drink except for alcohol, because you got to work now. Okay. You might do that after hours, but while you're working, I would have two people there in charge of hydration and food. You know, making sure that there's plenty of snacks available. All right. There's a set aside time where, like, they might be cooking spaghetti or chili or what, but having a hot meal prepared where it's not too heavy, but there's a lunch break. I would have two people, possibly three, on that detail. All right. And because the last thing you want is people that are hungry and dehydrated working on, because when you're working like that. All right. So we'll see. That's 2 in each bedroom. That's 6. Let's put 3 in the kitchen. Kitchen detail. Because one might have to run out to the store, Walmart or whatever, to pick up whatever. So you got out of that three, you got a runner in case you need one. So that gets us up to 9. So we still got 10 more people. All right. And then, you know, you got a living room, dining, you know, once again, I would put 2 people per room. That's how I would do it. All right. That way they're not running into each other or anything like that. Now, when you're building, you know, because you might have to build, you know, 2 people. All right, here's the team that's going to build the walls. Here's the team that's going to, you know, build the roof and the parts of a roof. Because you can break it up into, you know, break people up into teams and stations, and you can organize it that way. But that's, like I say, you know, you can do it any kind of way you want to. All right, because it's only limited to your imagination. But like I say, with the 9 friends thing, like I say, 9, I really should call it maybe 18 friends, but I'd say 9 because of those 9 pickup trucks. But I'm figuring bare minimum there was 19 people at that site. 9 came up, I mean 18 came up within those 9 pickup trucks. And it worked as a team. Like I say, everybody... I would have, this is just me, 3 people on KP kitchen duty. All right. And then, you know, you have break times. Anytime they wanted something to, you know, like a granola bar or an apple or orange or whatever, you know, they can get that on their own whenever they wanted to do it, you know. But I would have a lunchtime, because they did this overnight. I would have a lunchtime where everybody's sitting down and eat nothing heavy. And then at the conclusion of that, because they got the whole house fixed up, as you heard him, brand new, within a matter of hours. At the conclusion, then have the heavier meal at the conclusion. Then everybody pack up and then, you know, go back home. All right. But that scenario could be run so many times. I mean, A, you can buy your goods from Costco, wherever, or you can get party trays. It's only limited to your imagination on how you can handle that. All right. But, you know, I wouldn't put 1 person and say, you paint these 3 rooms or you paint the whole. No. I had a property in Pittsburgh. I hired some day labor. I hired 7 people out of that day labor shelter in Pittsburgh. I had a whole house painted. It was just 2 floors. All right, 2 floors. I had the whole first floor and the top floor painted. It was, you know, what people call a row house. I had that whole house painted in 3 hours. Probably less than that, but I'm going to put it at 3 with 7 people. I just picked them up. I had everything they needed, the paint, equipment, drop cloths, and all that. and took them to the building, which is really right around the corner from where they were staying at the men's shelter. And I probably did that job in a little bit over two, but I'm going to put it at three with seven people. I didn't pick up the brush. I bought the stuff and said, you know, here it is, get, you know, and told them what I wanted. But, and then I paid them at the end of the day. And I probably saved 70 to 80% of the retail costs on a job because I had to come from out of town to do that. Because at the time I was living in Washington, D.C., so Washington, D.C. between there and Pittsburgh is like a 4-5 hour drive one way. So I drove there, went to the Salvation Army men's shelter, got my day labor, got seven guys. You know, I had to ferry them in my car. It was right around the corner, so it was a short drive. Got them started. Okay, and see with the 2 hour thing, it wasn't, you know, they were already fed. They already had breakfast and all that. So I got them in and out by lunchtime. So I didn't have to worry about feeding them. I had water there, but I had to worry about feeding them or nothing like that. So that's how I got a two. The basement didn't need any work done to it. It was just the complete first floor. I needed a paint job. And on the top floor where the bedrooms were and there's a bathroom and all that in the hallway, so I'm going to put it at three. So I got them right after breakfast, and then I got them back with spare time for lunch. That's how I did that all. And then I got back on the highway 4.5 hours, went back to D.C. Day trip. All right, so these are some of the things that we'll be learning in real time because, like, on our first three projects or whatever, we might not be able to pull it off in a day or, you know, the bigger project a week. But we'll see, all right, here's what works, here's what doesn't work, here's where we can tweak it, and then, you know, get it down. Because I know we'll run into people that I can do the whole job, but no. We're not looking for that. We're looking to get things done in a team fashion because if you can get it together in a team fashion, and going back to the Randy Jones example, Randy, once again, he builds his tiny house. Well, he's got a whole selection, but he's got a model that he'll build. The retail price is $20,000. So with a team of seven, he can build a tiny house within 8 hours for $20,000. But that's the selling price. But he does three to five of those a day. So let's take the five examples. So with a team of 35 people, all right, divided, you know, 7 times 5 is 35. All right, he can build to completion five tiny houses. So 20,000 times... five in a day, an 8 hour day on some days, and then he's constantly selling this stuff. Randy Jones can generate a revenue of $100,000 in an 8 hour day. Once again, his channel on YouTube is Incredible Tiny Homes. He's not the only one doing this, but I'm just saying. So if you want to find a way to earn $100,000, now he won't state it the way I'm stating it, but just he's got a whole rack of videos. He's on there Monday through Friday, but you can see his team working. It's a basic arithmetic just like that. Seven people can build a tiny house in 8 hours. Now, he didn't start off that way. It started off with him building one by himself lonesome. He had he wasn't even thinking. He just needed a place to stay. But the business aspect of it, you know, so that's his version of nine friends, because he's got 35 plus friends now. So that's what he does for that. So we're going to start with our tetrahedrons. I'm going back to the tetrahedrons. We'll get into that in the offline meetings, conferences we'll have on that, and putting that whole thing together. Now, let me open up Robin's mic, because she's got an announcement to make. If you call in, Robin, are you there? Her mic is opening. Because I believe we've had some issues with background.
Yes, here.
Yeah, what's the deal on background noise?
So the background noise, when you call in, keep your phone on mute. Mute your microphone unless you're talking. People are calling in. They're washing dishes, running water. There's a smoke alarm going off in the background. I don't know. So if you call in, just mute the mic. If there's noise on your line, you'll be disconnected. Because we're broadcasting in mainstream media, so quality control, little housekeeping.
Okay, all right, that makes sense. And all right, so for the now we start on Monday. Now we continue to do what we do here for the last 9.5, almost 10 years. So we're keeping this intact. But Monday we're adding on another element, which we're doing boots on the ground. We're doing a radio program on a religious radio station. So we're keeping it tight because it's 1 hour a week. So on, and I'll give out the information on that tomorrow, and there's an app on it and a phone number you can call in and listen and all that other kind of stuff. I'll put all that stuff out there tomorrow and post it for you. But on the 1 hour a week, which will be on Mondays, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m., okay, the station is out of Jacksonville, Florida, so we'll be having boots-on-the-ground activities in Jacksonville, Florida, where we'll be building, we'll be not buying, but we'll be building these persons we're talking about. We'll be organizing tours to rural areas where if you're interested in buying acres of land, we'll have that up. This will all be boots on the ground. And the reason why now Jacksonville is just our flagship market, because the reason why we're going with terrestrial radio on this, actually we're doing an AM station, FM station, and then you can catch us online as well, because it'll be high touch. High tech is one thing, but when you combine high tech with high touch, and high touch, by what I mean by that, is me and you face-to-face working on a project together, okay, or taking a break while we're working on a project together and drinking something cold to drink or having a granola bar or a hot dog or something like that. So we're going high-touch, boots on the ground. Now, Jacksonville is the first boots-on-the-ground radio market, but we'll have others that we'll add on to that as time goes by. So what we're doing is we said, let's start with one, because we got a whole lot to do within a 60-minute program, or actually 59 minutes. Actually, may as well, because with the intro and outro, we got 58 minutes to get out our message. So, and then direct people on, okay, here's where we're going to be Tuesday, and then here's where we're going to be on Saturday, because we have an event, Boots on the Ground, on Saturday the 9th. All right, so, and the whole idea is that is, we want to meet people, boots on the ground. We have listeners in Asia and Africa and South America and in different parts of the United States. But, you know, if we say, all right, let's meet at a particular location on, let's see, we do the show Monday on Tuesday at 6. more than likely that person or group of people are not going to be there. Or we have a tour going on Saturday in a specific part in Florida. They're not going to be there. So what we're going to be, like I said, we're going to do the boots on the ground so we can meet a group of locals where we can actually do these projects. Some things we can do remotely. Like we have a meet, like our first Suzu, where we have four people already. All right, I'm one of the four. Robin's one of the four. All right, well, we have a meet, a conference call. Now, all, I'm in Florida. Robin is up in Washington State on the West Coast, Pacific Northwest. We have another person. He's in Texas. And the fourth person is in Memphis, Tennessee. All right. Those type of things, we can work on a project that will be a physical project, but there's certain things that we can do remotely and be anywhere on in the universe. All right. So we'll do that, but then the project is physically done in the location, boots on the ground. And then after we have that built, then we put it online for sale. And tomorrow we'll go more into detail on that. And then, like I said, we have, now if you're not one of the original four, you can still participate in tomorrow's conference call. I mean, listen to it at least. You can listen to it. And that conference call is free. Now, in order, the people that we have on the call tomorrow, they pledged, because we're taking the first thing we heard from Lamar, here's a project that we can put together in a day. Now, remember, Lamar says, so Lamar can put it together in a day. Okay. Boots on the ground. But we're talking about four people remotely.
Did you
I gave it out to the people that will be on the call.
Okay, but you just announced that other people can
and
be
I'll
on
give
the
that
conference.
Number out. Put it this way. If anybody wants that number, contact me directly. Text me at 425-520-0605. And I'll text that number to you for tomorrow afternoon. And that's at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, just for your local time zone. All right. So now you don't have to come out of your pocket with the first 50. That's just four people played so far. Now, after we go through what we're going to, you know, the line items, you know, here the materials we need, where we're going to have it built, who's going to build it, that type of thing, and then, you know, we get everybody to see on that, then I can just tell you, you're like, for instance, if the project, let's say the property is going to be built in Chicago, all right, then I'm in Florida, then if I decide, all right, here with my 50, I'll get the casters, the OSB board or the plywood or whatever, and I'll call the local, what do you call it, Home Depot or Amazon, and then have it delivered. I'll pay for it online and have it delivered physically to whatever location who's ever going to physically be building it in Chicago, and we can go around the table on that. So we'll get in all that at that thing tomorrow. And then, like I said, I'm, you know, that'll be covered on tomorrow's on that conference call. So,
if you're in the backyard and if you're on the on our alternate line, and if you have a comment or a question, press *6 to let me know, and I'll unmute your.
Okay. All right. So
okay.
She's the gatekeeper on that. And so after we do first one, you know, we'll take a look back and all right, what do we need to do for the second one? And because that's the activity. Every week, we're going to have a weekly project. Every week, we'll have a weekly project. So that's all I got for you for now. And then we'll save the reparations talk and all that for here. But on Monday nights, when we do, because it's just once a week, on Monday nights from 6 to 7 p.m., we're not getting political. We're not discussing, we're not getting on the reparations gravy. We're not getting on, all we're doing there is it's what can we do? Who wants to get, we're looking at housing. The name of the program is Abiding Faith Housing Ministries. So we're looking at contemporary housing issues. It could be, all right, you got a problem. Now, people pick out possible solutions. We're just throwing out ideas and putting boots on the ground on how to execute those ideas. If you got a problem with rent, we might have something for you, boots on the ground. We're not selling any books. We're not selling any tapes or nothing like that. But from Isaiah 65:21, it says, we shall build houses and live in them. That might be your solution. By you learning a new skill on learning how to build your own debt-free house. Now, we can't help you build the McMansion, but we can teach you how to build the tiny house. We're all right there together. And from that point on, you're on your own. Okay. Some of you, you know, you got a place to stay, you're good, but you might be looking to earn some extra income. Well, we can teach you how to build, like, you know, we had a guest on here about less than three months ago, out of Oakland, California. He bought two tiny houses, and he makes about, what, $10,000 a month renting out those two tiny houses in his backyard. Well, we can teach you how to build a couple of tiny houses, and it's up to you where you put them and the legalities and all that, but we can teach you how to do that, and we'll help you do that, all right? So that, like I say, that's next Monday, and every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. On WCGL, that's 1360 a.m., I think it's 94.7 FM. You can listen to them online, and we'll post all this stuff tomorrow, and we'll post it all on Monday again. And they also have an app that you can download to your phone, and you click on the app, and you can listen to that station 24/7 live. So we'll be on live next Monday from 6 to 7 p.m., and then, you know, for the Jacksonville and vicinity folks, that includes Southern Georgia, you know, we'll have something for you on Tuesday evenings. And then on Saturday, September the 9th, and from every Saturday there on out, we'll be meeting you in Jacksonville, and we'll be taking field trips. These field trips will include finding out how you can buy land in rural areas at affordable prices and how to build mortgage-free housing. It'll be tiny housing, but, we take that, and if you want to build a McMansion on your own, that's up on you. We just get the fundamentals. So this is what we're doing, boots on the ground. Now, just don't, now we're not stopping at Jacksonville. This is just where we're starting. Okay, because after that, our next metro area will probably be Memphis, Tennessee. We'll probably do something in Orlando, Florida. We're going to pick, it's a total of five radio markets, and I've only got three picked out. But the first one, which is live, is this coming Monday, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Totally different thing from what we do here on It's My House. Totally different. Mainly because it's a religious station, so we here we can use any kind of language we want. We can't with that. But we're going with that because we need a boots on the ground element where we meet people solving everyday, like if you got a tax problem, got a reverse mortgage problem, you know, we're taking a scripture, at least one scripture a week, and we're applying it to a real life situation. And I'll repeat it. Matter of fact, I'll give three scriptures. Actually, let me think of four. Let me off the top of my head, Robin, keep me on track here, or anybody in the audience. Isaiah 65:21. I don't go to church. See, when I'm speaking on Monday, and I'm even speaking now, I'm speaking like a regular guy. I've gone to church a few times since the pandemic online, you know, for a friend I might be here with a service that, they had their own church or whatever. But, man, I haven't set foot in the church, so I'm really not, you know, I do my prayers and all that other thing. But, I can't remember the last time I physically stepped in the church. But there's some scriptures that I swear by. So I'm just giving you some examples of how we're going to do this on Monday. Now, Isaiah 65:21 says, it's real simple. Build houses and live in them. So if you're struggling with a mortgage, about to get evicted, foreclosed on, I'm not giving no legal advice because I'm not a lawyer. But I think it's a good idea if you follow that one simple scripture. If you don't know how to build a house, learn how to build a house. So one of the things that we'll be doing is we'll be taking that one particular scripture, build houses, and live in them. So if you don't know how, we'll be getting together with other people so you can learn how. Right in Jacksonville or wherever we take you, because we've got to spread about two counties away from, actually three counties, away from Jacksonville. But we'll be doing some things physically in Jacksonville where you can learn how to build. And that way you can get yourself out of a predicament. Another scripture would be, now this is a real life situation, right? 2 Kings 4:1-7. Now that basically, you know, the widow lady, her husband passed away, and then two creditors knock on the door and say, look, your husband died, you know, he owed us this kind of money, this kind of debt, and if you don't have it, then those two sons you got, they become our slaves and they'll work off the debt that way. And she said, look, wait a minute, hold up. Give me some time to work this out. Let me get back to you. Give me some time to get the bread together. I'm paraphrasing for you. I'm using 2023, 2024 language. All right. So she went to, well, the way they have it written in the Bible is they went to the prophet. The prophet told her what to do. So she went back to her house and met with her sons. Now, she said, told her two sons, look, you go out, because she had a little crucible of oil, a little pot of oil. That's the only thing of value that she said she had, that she recognized that she had. And that's not only the only thing of value that she had, but that's the only thing that she gave herself credit of recognizing that she had. All right. So she told her sons, look, go out into the neighborhood, borrow some vessels and some empty vessels, bring them back here. And then they did that. Now, before I get into detail on that, what she did when she went back home and had a powwow with her two sons, okay, what they did, and this is what the Amish do, this is what the Mennonites do, this is what people in the know do, they started a family business. So if you're in a lurch right now for some money, and you're facing foreclosure, eviction, the car got repossessed, the lights got cut off, it might be a good idea to get together with your family, sit down and have a powwow, and start a family business, because that's what she did. Next thing, they went into the neighborhood and they borrowed. They had social capital. They had social capital within their community. So they didn't have to buy any vessels. They went and borrowed the empty vessels. And she went back and the talent, the oil represent, everybody's got oil. Everybody's got something valuable as well. All right. And then, of course, then after every vessel was filled up, she went back to the, you know, the property whatever, and or the financial advisor. And, all right, now I'm all filled up. I'm out of oil. You know, what I'll do next. And then he told her, sell the oil, pay off the debt, and live off the rest. That's what we're doing on Monday nights and on Tuesday nights in Jacksonville and on Saturdays all day in the northern part of Florida and in your neck of the woods when we get to your neck of the woods, boots on the ground with a radio station, is we're showing you how to do that in real time with you involved. That's the difference between what we do on Monday nights with the Abiding Faith Housing, you know, Housing Ministries program, radio program, versus what we do here on It's My House. And, you know, it, like I say, it's a whole demographic of people. So another scripture. Okay, mind you, I don't know much. Telling you about all I know. And that's not much. If you go to Ecclesiastes 11:2, you have people out here that they have a two-household income. They might even have a three-household income, the husband or the dude or the woman, whatever. Somebody's got two jobs, and another person's got three, so they have three incomes coming to us, and they're still struggling. They're still struggling. Well, let's go to Ecclesiastes 11:2. You can look it up and call it in 619-768-2945. But here we go. And Ecclesiastes was written, what, over 5,000 years ago? Whenever it was. It says basically, and I'm paraphrasing, you need to have 7 to 8 sources of revenue coming in. Now, it doesn't say it the way I'm saying it. You can break it down to interpret the way you want to interpret that. That's my way of paraphrasing it. Because that way is going to take care of inflation, in my opinion. So if you've got 7 to 8, now bare minimum seven. And it doesn't say the maximum should be 8. All right. But if you've got 7 sources of revenue coming in, then you should have some breathing room to have, you know, to save maybe 20-25% of everything that comes in. You got a cushion, you know, all the bills are paid. You know, you can basically live the way you want to live. But there's a whole bunch of people struggling, and they got 3 paychecks coming into the house. All right. So we're taking, and then now what we're doing is, all right, some of you might want to hang with us on Saturdays, and we'll be doing Sundays eventually. Because here's how we'll be rolling. Radio program on Monday night, 6 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, we'll have an online housing Bible study. In other words, here's the scripture that we're doing. Here's the modern-day problem that we have to solve. And then we're going to plan on Tuesdays and the conference call from the people that called in on Monday, and then on Saturday and Sunday, we're meeting face-to-face, and then we're working on what we went over Tuesday. So if we're working on an Ecclesiastes 2 problem, in other words, okay, You're not starving. You're not ass out on the street. Well, I can't use that term on Monday. But, or when I'm with these people. But you're struggling. All right. Then what we're going to do is we're going to help you build 7 to 8 tiny houses that you're going to put up on Airbnb or offer up or wherever you need to put them, where these 7 or 8 properties that you built with social capital, because that's part of our mission statement. Learn how to build houses using social capital. We cut out the banks. We cut out the government. We cut out social. It's social capital. That's how this whole thing works, on social capital. All right, which that's scriptural too. So I don't go to church, but I'm telling you what works. All right, so that's what you can expect. Boots on the ground, starting Monday night, and then like say we follow with Tuesday, Saturday, and Sunday. The Saturday and Sunday sessions in person, and then I imagine very soon we'll be doing weekday sessions in person as well. We had to find out what's happening for the first 2 weeks, and by week number 3, we're meeting particularly when we do these that really small tiny house build. By week 3, okay, let's get together, knock this out after work and or during lunch break, get it out the way, put it up on eBay or Facebook Marketplace and you know, get rid of it that way. So anyway, that's a rough overview of what we'll be doing with our boots on the ground starting Monday. We'll still be having these podcasts Monday through Friday as we've been doing for the last 9.5 years. But on Mondays, that from 6 p.m. To 7 p.m., we're taking contemporary problems, including, what time is it right now? It's 18 minutes after 12. Yeah, people out here that are homeless right now that have got put out an hour or so ago, they don't know where they're going to sleep tonight. So we're going to take some people and, you know, after we get it down packed, all right, and we're not taking any old body now. With some people we're going to have to be working with, we don't take straight homeless. We're dealing with anybody from any income bracket. But there's you can come in for free, but then there's a membership. And everybody gets assigned our passport, not a United States passport, but we have our own passport. So in any event, stay tuned for Abiding Faith Housing Ministries coming Monday, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. We'll give you all that information tomorrow with the apps and all this other stuff. 704, I'm on the short bus. I had to get off the short bus. 407, I read that backwards. Your mic is open.
Good day, L.A. This is Beata with Health and Wellbeing with Beata and Soul Purpose Healing Blog Talk Radio. And I heard you mention the McMansion. You're not going to be helping people build McMansions. And
no.
I want to just remind people to get McMansions out of your mind, because what people don't realize when they have the American dream that turns into a nightmare is because of the maintenance costs on the McMansion. And I realize Hollywood stars, music stars, those are the people who can maybe afford a McMansion. But I realize your average working person cannot afford a McMansion. We have this dream, again, for the 3-car, 2-car garage, 3-bedroom, 3-bed. But the maintenance cost is what causes people to lose their houses. So thank you, L.A., for...
And you know what, Viata, I'm so glad you brought that up. And we're going to have you on as a guest because you just said something that I would say over 50% of the people who get into problems with their housing is exactly what you said. They have not figured out. They haven't even sat down. Even the loan officer has not sat down with them and taken a look at the maintenance cost. They haven't done
yeah.
it. And you
yeah.
don't even have to have a McMansion. You don't even
That's
have
right.
to have a McMansion. If you've got a, I don't know what the square footage is. Let's say it's something like 900, let's say even 900 square feet, or even 700
right.
square feet. If you don't have the money to put on a roof, and a roof can run you $25,000 or more, you know, depending on the size of the house. And we're not talking about a big house either. If you don't have it, you're in trouble.
Right. And if you don't know how to put on a roof, now I have family members who put on a roof on my house. I didn't have to hire anybody. I didn't have to get a permit, anything like that. But they put on the roof because they have the skills. And basically they went to YouTube because YouTube can teach you anything. But that's
right.
the thing. If you have a house and you have maintenance skills, you have any mechanical skills, go to YouTube and you'll save a lot of money. Otherwise, people who work in 8 hours a day, 7 days a week, they don't have time to do that. So then you got to hire somebody, and that's where the costs go up and up and up. Especially if you got major repairs, the city wants you to pull a permit. That could be $1,000. I mean, those costs just and these days, cities, municipalities, they are trying to get rid of people from these houses. I think it's just crazy.
I agree with you 100%. I agree with 100%. Now, Viata, you've lived in big houses, houses with pools, and you're on your second tiny house. With your second tiny house, how much money do you think you would have saved? Because I think I know you hired out some of the work, but you did some of the work yourself?
Well, the painting. I did the minor things. I had to have plumbing put in. I had to have electrical work put in. And the cabinets installed, toilets, bathtubs. That was upwards of $10,000 just to have all that work done, because the plumbing had to be connected to the sewer in the front. So, but the painting, wallpapering, you know, the interior, I did most. I put up shelves, painting, wallpaper. I just put in two new doors. So the minor things, yeah, but major things like plumbing and electric, man, you don't play around with that. You get a professional to do that.
But let's go back to what you call the minor things. Now, had you subcontracted that work out to somebody else, how much do you think you would have spent retail on the work that you actually did? If somebody else did it?
These days, you find a handyman or you find a business, whatever. It depends. I would say anywhere from 500 on up. Because painters, I don't know what painters charge by the square footage and all that. And then you have things like shelves to put in, and they work by the hour. And so it's. I know putting in two new doors was over $1,200.
Okay.
So that's something fairly major. That's something major, though. The labor it took to take the old doors out, put the new ones in, over $1,200. Just the doors alone. The doors weren't that expensive, but the labor, that's what gets you, whether it's your car or house. They're charging you for human labor.
Yeah, well, American labor is pretty expensive. So now you've had... Now, what's the largest house? Because you lived out in California, so how many square feet was that house?
Oh, that house was fairly small, but it was up to upwards of 2,500 square feet, I think. Yeah.
That ain't small.
Yeah, it was 3 bedrooms, 2 baths.
Yeah, that's not a small house, 2,500 square feet. I wouldn't call it small at all.
Yeah, it was a fairly large house.
Okay. Now then you moved from California, then your family moved down to Florida, Orlando. Now, was that house larger or what?
Oh, it was much larger. Yeah. Because houses here are a lot less than the ones in California.
Okay.
So
about how many square feet was it? You had a pool in that one?
Yeah, pool, everything. It was over 2,500 for sure, or close to 3,000 or more. I don't know at this point. Yeah, it was close to 3.
All right, you had a pool in that house.
You said something about labor, though, that I was thinking about. You know, we outsourced a lot of things to China because of the cheap labor. China was trying to attract businesses because they have slave laborers over there. I mean, pennies an hour. That's the type of labor. So we as a country, I think we're going to have to adjust to our addiction to slave labor, cheaper products. And, yeah, we might have to pay more because the labor in America should not be slave labor. So just a little thought for everybody about, you know, paying for labor. I don't mind paying people for labor if they do a good job. You got to live in America.
All right, you brought up a good topic. I go to Walmart at least once a month, okay? A lot of the things that are in Walmart are made in Asia. Some of it's made in China. Some of it's made in Myanmar, which used to be which is the new name for Burma. So, Vietnam, these places. I mean, a lot of people who have, I'm an Android man myself, but a lot of people, if you have an Apple product, an iPhone or Mac Pro or whatever, that stuff's made out of Africa. I'm not Africa, but Asia. So, what you might call slave labor, because in those cultures, they have a different lifestyle. They're not into heavy consumption like we are. We have to have, like somebody who likes a big steak dinner and they get a big T-bone steak. Well, we take that same steak that one individual might eat here in the United States with the sour cream and chives and the baked potato and all that. You go over to the Philippines or China, you've been to China, and, you know, that one plate that an American consume, all right, that might be dinner for 3 people. And they're good, fit, and satisfied with it, because I know when I was in the Philippines, after you ate dinner, you went out walking. But over in this culture, you know, if we eat that dinner with the sour cream and cheddar and butter and all that other stuff, then we got to take some Tums because we got heartburn. Then we don't get up and exercise. We don't go walk at all. So I think what we call slave labor is I think we haven't learned how to live a different lifestyle on a critical mass basis. That's just my opinion.
Most corporations are having their products made in China because the labor is cheaper. That's all I'm saying.
Well, we buy
Not
into
that they,
it because they're like I say, we're talking about they live a different lifestyle, and then they don't. I mean, let's face it, Americans, we eat. Now, this is just L.A.'s commentary. On a critical mass basis, I think we eat too much. We take too many pills. We just overdo it. It's consume, consume, consume. Whereas now in these other cultures, they're into conservation more than we are. You know, like somebody like in Barbados. In Barbados, you see a lot more people riding the bike or walking, and you speak to the locals, and they say they can't afford to get sick. So, therefore, they're more into fitness and appreciate fitness more than the typical American would. You know,
well,
so
that's kind of how I view Cuba. The people there cannot afford to get sick. They're skinny. There's no obesity epidemic from what I saw when I was in Cuba. Most of the people are very thin. And the medical system I believe a lot of the medical or health care is paid for by the government. So, and what they do have to pay for, I'm sure, they can't afford it. So they're a lot healthier. They don't have any fast food restaurants there. So it makes a difference. You're right. The lifestyle we live here creates sickness and disease. whereas in other countries, they actually have McDonald's in China, so they might have a health problem. But I'm just saying, just pay for the labor in America and or either learn how to do it yourself, but don't complain when people charge you a high amount for labor, because you either pay them or you're contributing, in my opinion, you're contributing to the slave labor in China especially. And it is a slave. They're getting slave wages over there. I don't care what their lifestyle is. It's a lot of poverty in China, and the government promotes it almost with the slave labor that they offer for other companies to come and produce there.
You there?
So let's just build up America and pay for the labor.
But what about, all right, for instance, now one of the things we're talking about, when we're talking about like the Amish, when they get together and build a house, they cut out the middleman. They cut out, they don't do mortgages. So they cut out the bank. They cut out that whole industry. Because if you include the bank and you include contractors, you know, that goes back to a friend of mine just bought a house. And the house is, by the time they finish paying for that house, they'll probably pay double the price of the house. I'd rather go the nine friends way and cut out the bank, totally cut out the government, and build houses with, and matter of fact, that's how this country was really built to a high degree, was off social capital. But before I go deep into that, you've got tomorrow's Friday, September the 1st, with Soul Purpose, well, the Female Solution. What do you have for us tomorrow on the Female Solution?
My guest is a doctor, Romeo Brooks. He's a naturopathic physician, and he's going to, our topic is overcoming constipation of the mind and body. There's a realization I've come to that when you're constipated, it's not just a physical problem, it's a mental energy that's blocking things in your life that can contribute to constipation. So he and I are going to break down constipation for you and help people overcome it. That's tomorrow at 8 a.m. Standard Time on the Female Solution, Health and Wellbeing with Viata. And you can view it on Facebook, my page, Soul Purpose Healing Facebook page, or you can go to my YouTube channel, Viata's Tiny House Village. And that's 8 o'clock Eastern Time.
Okay, and just on a closing note, you said when you went to Cuba, you were there for about, what, 3 or 4 days or something, or a week?
3 days.
And you didn't see any fat people?
Very few. They were, you know,
no McDonald's.
Okay,
no McDonald's, no Burger King.
No, none of that garbage.
It's interesting. There's two guys I know that, two. Passed away, and they were big, actually three. They were big devourers of fast food. I think one was on dialysis. But
if you're not moving a lot and you're eating fast food, then that's what's going to happen. Your body will increase in size and weight.
Did
you think about we eat for fuel. We need fuel to move around, and you have to be nourished by something, either nature or food. And if you're being nourished by a lot of food, and you're not, the fuel is just going to sit there and create fat.
And disease.
My friend Ellie Tom Elamine, who's a breatharian, he's walking all over Africa. He just walked into Uganda today or yesterday time. So he's one of those people that has a very strong mind, not eating anything or drink. He's been walking all over Africa, not eating and drinking, just teaching people how to get energy and nourishment from nature. So we're on a spectrum we're on a spectrum of nourishment and eating, and some of us are way over on the left or right of the spectrum, overeating and getting fatter, while someone that, like Ellie Tom, doesn't eat much of anything, and he keeps moving, and he stays outside in nature all the time.
All right. Well, tune in to the Female Solution tomorrow for Soul Purpose Healing, and which is on Sundays.
Health and Well-Being on Friday morning. Soul Purpose Healing is on Sunday night.
All right. And
thank
she's
you,
got an archive. All right. Thank you. On that note, everybody have a good rest of the day.